focusing on what's that bigger, that macro perspective, and really focusing on logic brings us all together, because it's tough to fight with facts. The second thing, and this is really important to me personally, is ethics and integrity. So really making sure that if we have diverse opinions, it's okay because I understand the facts and it's authentic as it comes to me.
In this episode, we speak with Jennifer Bisigli, the CEO and founder of Interos, the Arlington, Virginia-based supply chain visibility company. Jennifer shares thoughts on the role of communication in shaping fast-growing unicorn companies. You're listening to CEO Voices, Leading with Communication, with your hosts, June West and Steve Soltis.
Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us today at the Darden School. Few issues in the world today are more important than de-risking global supply chains and ensuring operational resiliency. Your company sits at the intersection of these massive trends. Tell us a little bit about Interos and the problems you are trying to solve for customers.
Well, first, thanks for having me. There's no topic I love talking about more than the company and the impact that we're having right now in the world. And if you look at what's happened definitely since the beginning of 2020, it really played out on a global stage how hyper-connected every company and every country is in this global economy. And that's what Interos does. Interos leverages technology to actually provide a visualization and that transparency on a global size and a global stage of how companies are doing business with each other around the world in ways that they actually might not have known before. And so the platform ingests massive amounts of data, and it visualizes not just the supplier or the vendor that you know you're doing business with, but the suppliers and the vendors that those companies are doing business with the intent of showing our customers whether those extended supply chain relationships are a good or a bad thing. And when I say that, it can be based on business interruption.
Jennifer, you all just went through a really impressive Series C round of financing that pushed you over into the unicorn status, which my understanding puts you at over $1 billion, about $1 billion in valuation. And I did a little bit of research, found that there's 800 unicorns globally, and you're one of them. Could you talk a little bit about, because our students here are very, very interested in the process. A lot of them will go into entrepreneurship. They'll go into the startup community. But could you talk a little bit about the process of getting ready for the pitch, how you prepare for it, what's going through your head, and some of the lessons that you've learned so far in doing this? Because obviously you've been extremely successful.
You know, our claim to success, if you will, at Interos is that we have been singularly focused on this business problem of the lack of transparency in the extended supply chain. And so when you think about the valuation that we received, and trust me, it was a long time, as I mentioned, 17 years since I started the company, but I built the company off of my personal background. And so that's material because it lent itself to the ability to get the valuation we did. And it was actually very rapid. I bootstrapped this company for the first 14 years of existence, and I built it off of my personal background, well over 20 years focused, again, singularly on this problem of global supply chain and the lack of transparency. And so we bootstrapped for the first 14 years. We raised our Series A. We did a Series B last year in 2020 that put us into about $130 million. It was really being able to express very simply to our potential investors on how big the problem is and the fact that we had the right team at the right time to solve the problem. So from a preparation standpoint, it was really making sure we had product market fit, we had highly referenceable customers, we were running a solid company, and we were surrounding ourselves with the right teammates so that when an investor comes in, they feel confident that they can make the money back that they want to make. It's really, I hate to say that simple, but it really almost is that simple.
Terrific. Jennifer, closely related to that, how you appeal to your customer base. You guys have acquired some pretty high profile customers, NASA, U.S. Department of Defense, several Fortune 500 concerns. How do you go about articulating your pitch around the mapping, monitoring, and modeling solution you provide? Similar to the earlier question, what have you learned in that communication to customers?
Yeah, my Series A investor came in and said I had kind of three jobs when he came in and to the company. And he said that I needed to make sure that I had an actionable product. I had to make it very easy for the customer to make use of, so intuitive, and it had to be sexy. And that was it. Those three things is really what I use to make decisions around the product and our customer fit and how we go to market.
Let's get back to talk about global supply chains. In the time of COVID, it certainly changed the way that people think about global supply chains. We're all thinking about it as product shortages and fears of lingering geopolitical and trade tensions. You brought this home to all of us very, very into our homes. We all know this, though, is a negative story. What positive momentum do you see in this space, as I'm guessing that will play into your narrative moving forward?
We're hearing a couple things on the positive side, which I love to focus on, is one, boards in the C-suite are talking about this twice a month in a way that in my 20-some years has never happened before. What happened is the world was educated that they are only as strong and competitive as how solid their supply chain is. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is that there was a real wake-up call that back in the 90s, when supply chains really became very global and we all started offshoring manufacturing, we built them to be very fragile and very just in time. The other positive was the recognition that we did that and we built them fragile and just in time, which means that now we can take a minute to realize that that's not always good and we can actually build in some of the agility that we need. It's really a bit of a wake-up call on what it takes to be globally competitive and resilient in today's market based on the fact that we are so hyper-connected. All of that's a positive. It's the world we live in today.
How would you describe your company culture at Interos and how you are building and reinforcing that culture?
It's developing as we go. It's developing very quickly. The best thing that I can do as the founder is make sure it's really clear for everybody to understand what's important to me, the things that we do allow into the company and that we don't. When I welcome everybody the first week we're here, we go through the mission and the vision and the values of the company. So we allow our employees to catch each other, do something right every month, and we give out awards for our employees that align to that culture and to that vision that's developing.
We say that really at the end of the day, leadership is communication. Can you talk a little bit about what you look for in new hires in terms of their leadership skills and their communication skills?
Really coming at the day-to-day with a sense of empathy, as well as the ability to have direct communications, really important because we don't have a lot of body language going on over Zoom, right? And you don't have the water cooler conversations to ask people about their weekend. And so really coming with the fact that people have kids and they're taking care of their parents and there's just a lot of stressors. There's a lot of folks that are single and spending a lot of time by themselves. So coming at the day-to-day with a lot of empathy, with direct communication, because not all of us get each other's sense of humor, really focusing on where the company's going first, which might sound a little bit opposite than of empathy, but I think it really gets folks focus on something to rally behind, which is a common vision and a common purpose. And so it really allows us to move forward. The last thing, and the way I like to hire, is on attitude and aptitude, which is I didn't hire folks with a job title to sit in a chair and do a job. I brought people in because of where I could help take the company and the vision and our customers to and our team members to next. And I think that's the last piece that we're looking for as we're bringing people into the organization and focusing on that communication and leadership. You don't have to be part of the C-suite. And so I love cheering folks on with great ideas and great momentum and those that rally their teammates and help each other out. I think promoting leadership from within is the best thing that we could do to help people develop too.
Jennifer, curious as to your impressions on what you're seeing from newly minted MBAs in terms of their communication skills from a positive standpoint, but also from a constructive dissatisfaction standpoint. What could we be doing better?
Really focusing on what's that bigger, that macro perspective, and really focusing on logic brings us all together, because it's tough to fight with facts. The second thing, and this is really important to me personally, is ethics and integrity. So really making sure that if we have diverse opinions, it's okay, because I understand the facts and it's authentic as it comes to me. The last piece is that you really have to earn the right to become emotional, and realizing that emotion comes after I've already bought into with you facts and the logic. We have the ability to focus on kind of the emotion and the other pieces of bonding that bring us together as this great world we live in.
Jennifer, that fits with what we do here at Darden when we talk about how do you influence and persuade people with logos, ethos, and pathos. And you just put it all together in a very wonderful way. I'd like to just pivot for a second, because you've spent so much time in your career working with collaborative networks for women who are leading organizations. Would you talk to our women students about what have been your best practices as a woman trailblazer in this global supply chain resiliency company?
It might not be the best answer, but it's the honest answer, is I never focused on being a woman. I just focused on being the best leader I could, not perfect, but the best leader I could, and creating a valuable business. The way to create a valuable business is to really listen to your customer, listen to your team members, surround yourself with the smartest people you can. We're number 74 in the world as far as women CEOs that have hit unicorn. And now how many more can come behind us? Because I was one more female CEO that took a technology company to unicorn. So it's a little bit different too, because we weren't a B2C, we're not a business to consumer. We're a true B2B company, and only 74 in the world have done this. What's important for the women that are in your program? Just be the best leader, be the best team member, be the best business builder you can be. The rest comes with it. But then part of our job is to be the change that you want to see.
So Jennifer, let's talk a little bit about operational resilience. And it seems to me that what you're doing with AI and ML and the solutions you're providing to customers, you're helping create a new landscape, a new industry space. Can you talk about, how would you define the operational resilience landscape?
So we have moved the conversation to, instead of being rear view window looking, vendor due diligence, tell me the last 3 years of your financials, thinking that's going to predict how you would operate in a pandemic, to exactly what you just said. I want to be very forward-looking as a company, and I want to focus on my true operational resilience, which means I need to have at click speed and continuous the transparency of my extended supply chain. So when anything happens in the world, a cyber breach, one of my suppliers gets bought by a company or a country that I don't want to necessarily be affiliated with or do business with, or a ship goes sideways in a canal, I need to know what I need to do about it at a moment's notice. And that's what operational resilience means to Interos. And that's the problem that we're solving using artificial intelligence. There is no lag in artificial intelligence. And you can't solve this problem of global interconnectedness of the economy through surveys and people alone anymore. You have to use technology.
Jennifer, thank you very much. This has been a delightful conversation. In our final moments, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with our students?
How fast change is happening, how much money is available, and the different culture that it is today than it was 17 years ago when I started. For this class and for the folks listening, just know that you can do what you want to do. There are believers out there, and you just need one to say yes. Just know it can happen to you. And you just have to focus on building something valuable, and you can change the world as well.
CEO Voices examines the communication that enables transformational leadership. June West is Associate Professor of Business Administration and co-founder of the Darden Leadership Communication Council, along with her colleague, Steve Soltis. Soltis is the former head of executive communication at the Coca-Cola Company and lectures at Darden. This podcast is a production of the University of Virginia Darden School of Business.